The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
I remember every little thing as if it happened only yesterday. I was barely 17, and I once killed a boy with a Fender guitar. I don't remember if it was a Telecaster or a Stratocaster, but I do remember that it had a heart of chrome and a voice like a horny angel. I don't remember if it was a Telecaster or a Stratocaster, but I do remember that it wasn't at all easy. It required the perfect combination of the right power chords and the precise angle from which to strike. The blood of the guitar was Chuck Berry red. The guitar bled for about a week afterward, but it rung out beautifully, and I was able to play notes that I had never even heard before. So I took my guitar and I smashed it against the wall. I smashed it against the floor. I smashed it against the body of a varsity cheerleader. Smashed it against the hood of a car. Smashed it against the 1981 Harley Davidson. The Harley howled in pain. The guitar howled in heat. And I ran up the stairs to my parents' bedroom. Mommy and Daddy were sleeping in the moonlight. Slowly I opened the door, creeping in the shadows right up to the foot of their bed. I raised the guitar high above my head, and just as I was about to bring the guitar crashing down upon the center of the bed, my father woke up screaming, "Stop! Wait a minute! Stop it, boy! What do you think you're doing? That's no way to treat an expensive musical instrument!" And I said, "God damn it, Daddy! You know I love you, but you got a hell of a lot to learn about rock and roll!"
Minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of September in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. Hello and good day to you. It is Tuesday, September 21st, 2010. This is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. I am he. Thank you for joining us. It is 503-505-6964. If you want, you should get with the bumping of your gums. It's 503-505-6964. Telephone on turning happening now. There we go. All right. 503-505-6964. If you'd like to be part of today's program with your comments, questions, clarifications, ruminations, ponderings, musings of an ironic nature, recipes, whatever it is you might have. 503-505-6964. Or as we found out again, or were reminded again yesterday, you can also contact us directly via Skype. See, this is one of those things where it gets to be simple and then it becomes confusing again, because so we've got the actual phone number, then you can actually just, like, you can message us, like, as though we're like a text message or an instant message or whatever, an IM. That's at Rick Emerson Show Or then as a third option within the Skype, which is itself one of like 500 options, you can also contact us like the guy Ryan did yesterday from Zurich. Ryan from the future, who just sounded like he was not so much calling or even like Skyping as he was just like standing behind me. It was like he was just sort of looming in the back of the studio and talking to us. It was weird. Anyway, it was weird, but, you know, sort of great. Anyway, so that's Rick Emerson's show.
Can we do video conferencing?
We can do that, too.
Could we have people just kind of beam themselves in?
Here's the thing is you say that like it's not possible, and it really is. I think we actually could do that now. No fooling. I think we could actually do... I don't know if anybody else would be able to see it. I don't really know how that works. This is like how Sarah Dillon, who... I mean, I know she's going to be 30 and all, but that's no excuse for being out of touch with technology. I'm gonna ring that bell. I'm gonna beat that gong like it's the family mule. Even though she is approaching her 30th birthday, you would think that she would understand how science operates to some degree. Well, this is like her whole thing of like not knowing how Twitter works. And to be fair, I don't really know how Twitter works either. I really only know how to send messages. Like, I don't know what like lists
that's
or anything.
That's all it is.
No, but it's not. But there's like, but you see, you say that, but you know that's not true. That's you're saying that,
well,
but you know that's not
thing.
The case.
Yeah.
You go to Twitter and there's like 500 other functions that I don't understand. Can I confess something to you?
All
never
right.
mind. You know, hold on. I'm going to write it down. I'm not going to get sidetracked. I mean, I am, but not just yet. Hold on a second. All right. Twitter. All right. There we go. Fantastic. All right. Twitter.
All right.
The 124 milk train's coming through.
The old milk train. Just as I thought. Just as is proper. All caps in the text box. You are overcomplicating it! All right. Before we do anything else, let me just say what's coming up today. Hick Watch on the way. Snuff Watch. And I have no idea who died. Somebody of note, obviously, but I don't know who it might be. I mean, at some point, we're just going to run out of celebrities that I care about. At some point, everybody whose life is important to me, their death will have come.
And you know something, though, and I will say this as a tease. A person doesn't have to actually be a celebrity to be a person of note.
Okay, you're saying that they might be of note, but I wouldn't know their name.
Oh, you know their name.
Okay, see, now you're effing with me, because those are all things that none of those statements go together. This is like a...
All will become clear, Rick Emerson. All will become clear.
This is like Paul and Storm, who do that song about the guy that created the chicken nugget. And it's like, you don't know his name, but you know his product. And there's the whole thing about how he was, you know, in accordance with his will, he was mechanically separated and then sluiced down a pipe. Hick Watch on the way today. Snuff Watch on the way. You've got Monkey Watch up there, which is like... So now I have to make the noise, like, by my mouth. I have to do that
yes,
again.
Yes, you do.
And that's just like your way of leveraging me into making the Monkey Watch the actual... Because I think our friend Scott Landerville actually brought us a little monkey sound effect.
Yeah, what did you do with
it? I think it's up on the shelf. Oh, by the way... Don Taylor, because I was short-tempered yesterday, we talked about this before the show, we don't have to rehash the whole thing, not everything that we talk about in our personal lives needs to be grist for the air, but I will in this case say that, I told you earlier today that you thought I was being grumpy at you or that you were irritating me, it wasn't that, listening back, I can see how it might seem as though to the casual and uninformed observer, to someone who just sort of gives like the most casual glance imaginable to the program, that I might have seemed ill-tempered. I don't believe that to have been the case, and I certainly wasn't ill-tempered at you. I might have just been irascible in general because it's my nature, Don. It's part of my charm. But I've learned that all things can be healed with. Chocolate and peanut butter bugles. These are not to be confused, by the way, Cheryl, with those in the box, which I have not opened. I haven't rummaged through the box. I mean, Dawn opened it and rummaged through it. But I haven't even looked inside. I don't even really know what's in there. So, Dawn, I brought you some bugles.
Oh, thank you.
I understand that in your weakened state, you may not want to consume those right away. You were just reaching to open. That's so awesome. No, don't let me stop you. I was just about to say, I understand, because you're still getting over your illness. You may not want it, but it's like you were already looking down and doing it. You already had your hands on either side, and you were doing that like you're pulling on the spring thing in the Charles Atlas catalog.
That's
to get
so sad.
No, don't.
Snack foods. Rip.
Have at it. Don't hold back on my account. So I was at the convenience store last night, and I thought, what better way to say I love you than bugles?
Thank you.
So there you go. All right. In any event, Hick Watch coming up today. Snuff Watch coming up. Monkey Watch on the way. Let's see what else. We'll do the Week in Geek. Mr. Aaron Durant. How are they? Just as good as you remembered?
They are. And sorry, my mouth's open. Cheryl is asking in the text box, why don't I get gifts when he's being Mr. Cranky Pants to me? And I'm answering her,
because you live 100 miles from the studio, for one thing.
Was it because you can't shame him on the air?
Well, she could. She just chooses not to because she's a good person. But also, she's not here. You know, I mean, it's like, it's not like an out of sight, out of mind thing, but it's like an out of sight, out of my ability to bribe you with material goods and or foods. So, see, but now, like, the next time I see her, because I think she's coming into town. And that's how you, that, by the way, that's the reason right there. The fact that I just had to describe it is when you're coming into town, like you're the grandfather in Lost Boys or something. So the next time you pass through here from the country.
Because she's, what, out on a farm somewhere?
Well, I described her as living in Beaverton at one point, and she said that she lived, if I'm getting this right, she lives somewhere past Beaverton. And I think past Beaverton is just like that place on the map where it just says dragons. You know, like there's no... I don't even know what's past Beaverton. Something, I mean, I don't want to know what's past Beaverton. I think it's like the Langoliers where you get out there and food doesn't have any taste and there's no sound.
My God, chocolate peanut butter bugles are delicious.
That's what I'm saying. I bet you regret not living in Portland now, don't you, Cheryl? If that is your real name. Well, in any event, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, Hick Watch coming up, Snuff Watch, Monkey Watch, Top 5 coming up. We got the top 5 sleaziest songs to receive radio airplay. And I don't mean to receive radio airplay like some college station or some station nobody cares about, like KBOO. I mean, it's like, I didn't think of like an actual real radio station. The songs that were played on the air to thousands of people, but that are just almost unbelievably sleazy. And songs that I would say, were they to be released today, probably wouldn't be played on the air. It probably couldn't be played just because of the somewhat, if not overtly, vile nature of their lyrics. So that we're going to have that today. Top 5 sleaziest songs to receive mainstream radio airplay. We'll put it that way. What else do we have? Aaron Duran's Week in Geek coming up here in just a few. And I don't know, a whole bunch of other things that I've sort of written down, but we got a whole bunch of stuff coming up. Don Taylor is tracking the following stories on your Tuesday.
A bike rider is struck and killed by an Amtrak train. An ex-TV news director is sentenced to prison. And a pub is going to open in a funeral home.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, can you at least tell me, is that here in America?
It is here in America. Man. It's not here in Portland, sadly, but it is in America.
Let's see, what else do we have? Oh, so you mentioned this last hour during Legion of News. So if you are not privy to this information, Don and I do another program. Because that's the kind of work ethic we have here at the Emerson News Network. We do a show on PDX.FM from noon until 1. Legion of News, which then leads into this very fine radio program. So you said last hour that somebody, there was some local newscaster, so a woman who's a local newscaster, and she had referred to Hurricane Igor as Hurricane Igor.
Yeah.
Like, more than once. You said she did it repeatedly. And so...
I can't remember who it was.
Here's how we're going to find out, because, you know, if you've been on my Facebook, you've seen the guy's name. We were talking about this also. There's this guy who called up, and he said, hey, do you want Squeaky Fromm's home phone number? And I said, by God, yes, I do. He said, you don't even have to answer twice. You don't even have to ask once. You just know that I want it. And he said, I got Squeaky Fromm's home phone number. Squeaky Fromm, she of the Manson family. Her home phone number and her home address, like in case I ever need a place to crash the next time I'm in Burbank. Or is it in Burbank? It's in Burbank. Or is it? It is. Or is it? Anyway, he said, I've got Squeaky Fromm's home address and phone number. If I give this to you, will you give me one of those Emerson grants? Will you give me... Because he said he lost his gig or whatever, and he wasn't able to subscribe to the show. He didn't have the money. He didn't feel like he had the disposable income to subscribe to this program. And he's like, if I give you this, will you award me one of the Emerson grants so I can listen to the show for, you know, for at least a month? And I said, yes, absolutely. Hands down, no problem, yes. So he gives us the number. We give him the subscription. Everybody's happy. So we're not above bribing people. That really is how we obtain most things on the show. So here's the thing. Dawn, yesterday, and you're thinking it was yesterday, that you saw a local newscastress and she identified Hurricane Igor as being Hurricane Igor, which is just awesome. But you can't remember her name.
Mm-mm.
And you can't remember the network she was on or whatever the channel she was on. So here's the thing. If somebody out there can cough up ideally, like, video of this. I don't know how you would have audio and not video, so it seems like the video goes without saying, unless you just sit around and, like, tape the sound from, like, when Carl Click talks or something. Not that he's not a pretty man, but if you can conjure up the video of whoever this was, and we don't know. You say she was blonde?
I remember her as being blonde. The thing is, I could just be mapping that on in my own head.
So it wasn't like it was Rhonda Shelby or somebody.
I know it wasn't Rhonda Shelby. I would remember if Rhonda Shelby pronounced something wrong because she's awesome. I love Rhonda Shelby.
So if you if somebody out there knows who this was, I mean, we'll accept that. Here's the thing. If you can even come up with who it was, like if you yourself saw this happen, that at least is that probably doesn't get you the that probably doesn't get you the month subscription. But then, if you're listening, you're probably subscribing anyway. So I don't know how we'll work that. But if somebody comes up with just the name, that at least puts us like on the road to Wellville. But if you can actually find video, if you can come up with video of whoever this was, this Portland newscaster saying Hurricane Igor, then we will award you a one-month Emerson Grant. Now you're saying, I'm already listening, I'm already subscribing, what am I going to do with that? The answer is you are in turn going to then use that to bribe somebody you know or just as an unexpected gift for a loved one. So it's 503-505-6964 if you know who that is and if you got some video of it. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be reached at dawn@rickemerson.com, dawn@rickemerson.com. By the way, I'd like to thank, speaking of Facebook, I'd like to thank whoever it was that finally, I never mentioned this on the air because then it would seem like I cared about this sort of thing. Whoever it was that actually pushed me over the 2,000 Facebook friend limit, because there was this thing happening, you bastards, I will figure out who did this. Because I had never really made any announcement about it. I wasn't saying like, hey, I'm nearing 2,000 friends. I'm awesome. Because A, it's not like I sit and really track how many Facebook friends I have or something.
Oh,
or
yes,
just
you do.
See, I mean, I look at it. I mean, but it's like, first of all, I don't even know what counts. I don't even know if that's a lot. And it's not like I'm fishing for compliments or something, but I mean, it's a
goodly amount.
It's more than some folks, less than a lot of other folks. I mean, it's not like I'm racking up Ashton Kutcher numbers or something.
I have 400 and something, which is sizable.
Well, so it's more than you, which
for
is really
a regular person.
That's what matters, I suppose. Huh. But Cheryl put up a thing. She put up a message on my Facebook page, which is because there's two of them. We have facebook.com/. I think it's just Rick Emerson Show. I don't think there's a the. But then there's my own, kind of personal, which is facebook.com/Rick Emerson. That's kind of the one that I guess most people go to. And Cheryl put up a post saying something, like, hey, look who's nearing 2,000 Facebook friends. And so I did this kind of dick thing where I went in because I have friend requests. They kind of stack up. I'm probably like you where I go through like once a week because it's like, there's only so many hours of the day you can spend monitoring your Facebook crap. So it's like not that I'm not appreciative. I'm just saying it's like, we got to prep for the show and whatever. So I'll go through like once a week and just click like, yes, 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 spam, hooker, yes, 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 guy used to be mean to me, yes, 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 hooker. But I went through and I clicked on enough yeses just to get me to 1,999, and then I just let it sit there for like 2 or 3 days. And then I decided, because then somebody else posted a thing like, it's so exciting, I can't wait for it. And the idea that the number of Facebook friends I have, that would be exciting to somebody else is just sad on like every level imaginable. Collect stamps, friend. But so somebody else is like, it's so exciting, I can't wait to see it flip to 2,000 friends on Rick Emerson's Facebook page. I say, sounding like William Boracky. And so I finally left it at 1999, like forever. And then I went online and I went to my Facebook thing and I clicked, accept to somebody else. And I put it to 2,000. And then I came back like 5 minutes later and five people had unfriended and it had dropped back down to 1995.
Yes. Oh, that's great.
Dicks. Sons of bitches.
That is so great.
Sons of motherless whores. And so I just... So then I went, and so then it became like a whole war where then I added back like six people, and I know I'm just making it worse by doing it now. So then I added like six people, so it was like 2002 or 2001 or whatever, and then I came back and it was back to 1998. Thank you, thanks, Don.
Oh, I like that.
Anyway, so so I don't know. I don't even know where we are today. I mean, it's like I don't even want to check. It is like some weird thing where it's like I'm just not allowed to have nice things or above 2,000 Facebook friends because then the universe just takes people away from me. So
I just like that that your listeners and your fans just don't want you to experience pleasure.
No, I can't have nice things, Don, at all, or fun in any way. Hey, speaking of fun, so I meant to ask you, somebody emailed me about the clown porn. So we watched the clown porn on Friday here in the studio that listener yes. Charles had sent to us. We watched it on Friday, and then you were going to take it home. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that you were really going to spring it on Patrick, like with your sexiest underthings on. Like he was going to come home and you were...
And my red rubber nose.
Yeah, you were going to have like sort of a lacy garment of some kind on and, you know, and just have Mantovani playing in the background and say, yeah. Hello, sailor. And then meanwhile in the background there's sort of a, you know, as like a clown sex happening, clown effing, as he's plying his clown trade all over the screen. But I mean, you said you were going to watch it at some point, and I see that it's on the desk in front of you now.
Yes, I have returned. I brought back the clown porn.
Did you, A, take it home and just kind of forget about it like I did, where it was like in your bag, we forgot about it? B, take it home, put it in, and think to yourself, wait a minute, this is clown porn. I don't really want to watch this, and I'm not on the air, so I don't have to, and take it back out. C, watch it by yourself, or D, watch it with Patrick.
I watched it by myself, but also, here's the thing you got to keep in mind. I watched it out of curiosity. I really wanted to see what was on the rest of this,
right.
this thing, because it promises so much, Rick. You know, it's called Circus of Sex. It says 100% sexual oddities, freaks by nature. See how carnival freaks F. You know, be prepared for strange and obscene things. You know, you won't believe your eyes. So I'm like, you know, really. Of course, as mentioned before, on Friday night, after the show was over, I started sniffling and immediately came down with this horrible cold.
Yeah.
So I spent the entire weekend just like really sick, like just drinking the cold medicine and sleeping. And at some point I was like, I want to see what's on this clown porn thing. So I put it in and I was looking at it. And so granted, to begin with, I was not exactly in a sexy mood. But
what with the mucus and whatnot.
Yeah. But at the same time, though, I don't think it would have made a difference because I'm Circus of Sex. I'm sorry. It was not...
Was it underwhelming?
I was disappointed in Circus of Sex.
Feel like you were sold a bill of goods with that?
Well, first we had the... There's four segments. First was the clown segment, which we covered on the show, which we looked at.
That was... I have to say that delivered, though. I mean, in a sort of horrible sense.
It did. That really pretty much... I think if you're getting this DVD because you want to see clowns, a scary clown having sex with an attractive woman, then there you go. That's your payoff right there. And they probably should have saved that for later because that's the first segment on the disc. So right out of the gate, there's your clown.
So they do what boxers call leading with their right, where it's like, you know, they go with the haymaker right out of the beginning and then there's just nothing to follow up with.
They use their strongest material right up front. The second one was these four guys that were supposed to be, I guess, these sort of Clockwork Orange droogie kind of guys. With this really bad sort of white and black face makeup and bowler hats, and they had canes and suspenders. And I believe they were supposed to be in some kind of underground lair, and they had an unconscious woman on the floor of their lair because there was a ladder propped against the wall, and the camera kept cutting away so they could one at a time walk down the ladder as if they were climbing down into
their carnival sex tank.
Right. Yeah. Except it was just very obviously a very brightly lit set, you know.
And a ladder propped against the wall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my first thought is, like, how hard is it to find a basement?
Yeah.
Really. I mean, even if you're the lowest of low-budget porn, it's a basement, for God's sakes. Just any basement. If you want to have a basement scenario, use an actual basement. So that was disappointing right there. Then at least two of the four droog guys had false genitalia.
Members. Well, now was that in keeping with the Clockwork Orange thing? Because in Clockwork Orange, doesn't he have a huge fake phallus that he wears?
Do they?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I haven't seen it for years.
Maybe it was an homage.
I know it's like heresy, but I don't really care for Clockwork Orange, the movie. I mean, you know, it's nice and all. It's a nice film. It's just, I'm not one of those guys who's like really, really into it. But I seem to remember Alex the Droog having... where they're in the milk club, and he's sitting around with his droog mates and whatever, and that he has a huge fake member on.
Well, maybe he did. Maybe I need to give this homage more credit. But at any rate, they had these big, and they were like 2 feet long. They were just ridiculously long. And one of these fellows is actually like a black gentleman, and his giant false phallus is Caucasian colored.
Oh, so that's unfortunate. That's just wrong. That's insulting.
And I guess from the best, and they didn't really do too much with the dialogue. They tried to stay in character, calling each other mate occasionally.
So it really was. So this wasn't even, but it doesn't even sound like they were clowns. This is just like a bunch
no.
of, this sounds like a bunch of scenes that they had from different movies where guys happened to have makeup on.
Yeah.
One of them was a clown and they went, that's our hook, boys. And then they put them all together and then they just called it Circus of Sex.
Yeah.
Based on the clown. So this is more like a compilation of just dudes in makeup sticking it to women.
Pretty much, yeah. Because the third one was this sort of arty thing with this couple, and she's got like a pink tutu on, and they have this kind of like Harlequin-like makeup with little pink dots on their cheeks. So it's very kind of arty and Cirque du Soleil-ish, except without actual, you know, carnival acts. And then the last one, I don't even know what they were getting at. It was like somebody figured out how to use the posterizing setting on their camera and went, ooh, we'll make it like an arty student film. And the guy had that weird, like, see-through mask thing.
Right, yeah, like the, so that's the one in the front of the box. It's almost like he, it's like he's from, I want to say Logan's Run, but it's not Logan's Run. But you know what I'm talking about. It's like
and he's wearing red fishnets. For some reason.
No, see...
that's not freaky. It's like fishnets and a hat.
This is like that like an album where they lead with a single right up front, and then the rest of it's just filler.
And so the one question I came away from this, and I tried to get my husband to watch it, by the way, and he is, like many gentlemen, not averse to the pornographic arts.
Sure.
He's, in fact, in his own way, he's something of a connoisseur. But
he's not just a viewer, he's a collector.
When I explained to him, I said, I brought the clown porn home. He kind of took a step back. And I said, would you like to watch the clown porn? And he said, no.
No, I don't think so, Don.
No.
I think I'll pass on that.
And he looked worried.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, but like you were developing an exciting new fetish.
Yeah. So, but here's the thing. And he was unable to actually explain this to me fully, although he did agree with me that, you know, my observation was correct about this as a trend. I want to ask you, Rick, as a man who has enjoyed some pornography in your time.
How do you know?
Because you've talked about it a lot.
Okay.
What's wrong with the vagina? When did the vagina stop being sexy? Why do you have to use the other option, like, all the time in the pornography?
Are we really having this discussion?
I mean, that's fine.
I want to make sure that, like, we're actually... I was going to say getting into this, but I want to make sure that we are actually... This is one of those things that you're not asking rhetorically, that we are actually talking about this.
Because there is something I read once where women are concerned. This person had this theory, that what they called the one-third rule, of that if you take any random group of women and show them pornography,
right,
a third of them will be turned on, a third of them will be turned off, and a third of them will just be...
Indifferent.
Completely indifferent.
Right, okay.
And me, I kind of fall into the... either turned on or turned off. You know, I either just dislike it or I find it really hot. But I'm very, very specific.
You're particular.
And the thing is, I don't want to watch the butt sex.
Yeah.
I don't. If I'm fantasizing, if I'm trying to, like, you know, suspend a little disbelief, I'm putting myself, I'm relating to the characters, let's say. I don't want that done. I don't want someone doing that.
You find it you find it difficult to make it a sort of you are here kind of a thing.
It doesn't look sexy. It just looks really uncomfortable.
Just as a side note, I have to say that for many reasons, it's just the it's so hard to get away from the Dirk Diggler thing when you're talking about porn, especially, and the idea that when you were talking about a porn movie just now, you actually said it's just not sexy. It's just like in my head, I just see you in a van next to Chest Rockwell. Anyway,
because my husband confirmed that yes, that has become.
You're talking
the
about
norm.
The anal experience. Yes,
In mainstream pornography, this is,
I guess, although
expected now.
Oh, there's just so much here. I don't even know where to begin. Okay, well,
are viewers just really that jaded that it's like just?
Well, we should do this. Let's do this.
Okay.
Let's do this right now.
All right.
First of all, I guess it was just his turn. Michael Beatty, the cleaning solution, is
poor Michael Beatty.
He's hoping to bring you this discussion. He can be reached at 971-533-3211. We'll have more about him later on in the program. I will not subject him to further juxtaposition at this time. Coming up later on, we have The Week in Geek with Mr. Aaron Duran. We have the top five. Top five, this is appropriate, sleaziest songs. And seriously, you have no idea how appropriate. Sleaziest songs ever to receive mainstream radio airplay. Monkey Watch, Snuff Watch, Hick Watch. We'll return to this conversation here in just a minute. We should get a little bit of news done here. At the news desk, ladies and gentlemen, this is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Jeffrey Brent, also known as Jeffrey Allen, was sentenced Monday to more than 1 year in federal prison. In June, Brent pleaded guilty to wire fraud, making false statements to a bank, and misusing a Social Security number. He is the former Coin 6 news director who spent the last 24 years living under a false identity.
Oh, is he the bondage guy?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. He pleaded guilty on Monday morning to the three felony charges. The first two pleas were to federal charges of knowingly using an incorrect Social Security number and making false statements to a federally insured bank. The third charge, made in U.S. attorney's filing, involved wire fraud conducted against the Oregon Employment Department between 2008 and 2010, during which Brent filed weekly documents claiming to be unemployed while also being paid as a contract employee for the Cascade Policy Institute and the North Dakota-based Franklin Center for Government and Public Integrity. Investigators say he used a fake Social Security number to get credit cards, bank loan, and to apply for jobs, including one as news director at Coin TV.
Sorry.
He must also pay more than $35,000 in restitution and $10,000 in fine. He used the name Jeff Allen while working at Coin TV.
And so, and all I know is that Peter Carlin did like a three-part series on him in the Oregonian. Woe be to anybody at a television station who gets on the wrong side of Peter Carlin, because that is a guy who just carries around an axe labeled for television stations only. And he is not averse to swinging it, like repeatedly, like over the course of weeks, I think. So he had this huge piece about Jeff Allen that went on and on. I mean, I think it literally was over the course of like 2 weeks that he just sort of uncovered all of this stuff. And it was, maybe I'm getting part of this wrong, but it seems like the guy was running like some mail order, like the leather freak business or something, where he was, you know.
He had a bondage accessories business or something as well.
I'm sorry, I had to adjust this piece of paper. It was sitting on the table in a way that bothered me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm not crazy. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Let's do our snuff watch.
By the way, are you talking about earlier when you said that there was something that had opened in a funeral home? Was it a pub?
Yeah.
You're not talking about here in Portland, are you?
No.
Because this guy says, I got a message here via the text box on Skype. Says there's a McMinimins in a funeral home on Killingsworth.
Yes, there is.
Really?
Yeah. It's not a funeral home anymore.
Oh, okay. I was just going to. What is the name of
the Chapel Pub on Killingsworth?
Okay, that's what I thought he might be referring to. But it sounded as though he said it was. It sounded like he was, implying it was still active, which would have been kind of great, I suppose. I'm sorry. What are we doing here?
Well, I could read the pub story since we're talking about it.
Let's do that now, and then we'll do a watch.
City officials in Providence, Rhode Island, have granted a liquor license to the owner of an East Side funeral home, clearing the way for the business to open an Irish pub inside. Mark Russell, who operates Monahan Funeral Home, plans to convert a garage attached to the funeral home into a pub, which will be called McBride's. Inside, there will probably be seating for 55 to 60 people, Russell said. There will be a full kitchen. It will serve pub grub. Monahan Funeral Home is located in Wayland Square, an area filled with high-end shops. Area business owners said they aren't thrilled with the idea of a bar opening up in the upscale area. We really didn't want a bar per se, Wendy Brown said. We didn't want people to start drinking at 9 in the morning, then stay until 2 in the morning. To keep his neighbors happy, Russell said he's agreed to several restrictions. McBride's will close earlier than other city establishments. It will shut down at 11 p.m. on weeknights and at midnight on weekends. Our reputation has been here in Wayland Square since 1934, he said, and on the east side of Providence since 1876. We'd never allow something to develop that would be adverse to the neighborhood. Russell hopes to have McBride's open by March 1st, which would be just in time for St. Patrick's Day.
That's fantastic. And I have to say, the story didn't really make any sense. I mean, I understood what you were talking about, but I was trying to picture how that would work. But the idea that it is like an Irish pub sort of makes the whole thing kind of it just sort of seems inevitable, actually, that like
appropriate.
It really does. I mean, if you were to ask me what kind of pub would inevitably open up inside a funeral home, I guess Irish pub is really the answer I would have come up with. So well done. It's 503-505-6964. Here is Don Taylor.
Snuffwatch.
Here is your Snuffwatch, appropriately enough, right here in the Rick Emerson radio program. Here is Don Taylor with your Snuffwatch.
Lynyrd Skynyrd, the basketball coach and gym teacher who inspired the name of the Southern rock band Lynyrd Skynyrd, died Monday in Florida, his daughter said. He was 77. Skynyrd died in his sleep at the St. Catherine Labor Manor in Jacksonville, where he'd been living for about a year. Skynyrd had Alzheimer's disease. He was working at Robert E. Lee High School in Jacksonville in the late 1960s when he sent a group of students to the principal's office because their hair was too long. Those students later formed a band using a variation of Skynyrd's name for their own. During an interview in January 2009, Skynyrd said he was always bothered by the way the legend grew to say he was particularly tough on the band members or that he had kicked them out of school. It wasn't against the school rules, Skynyrd said then. I don't particularly like long hair on men, but again, it wasn't my rule. The band became popular in the mid-1970s with hits such as Sweet Home Alabama and Free Bird. Three of the band members, including lead singer Ronnie Van Zant, were killed in a 1977 plane crash.
I had no idea. See, here's the thing is, when you said earlier that it was a guy who was, what'd you say, notable without being famous? Mm-hmm. And then I said, I would never have heard his name in your life. But you have heard his name. And I was like, how is that possible? And you're like, I'll tell you. And I'm like, I can't wait to hear it. And now it's... First of all, I don't know why I hadn't heard that already. I am unashamedly, I'm a huge Lynyrd Skynyrd fan. And I just assumed the guy was already dead because everybody in the band is like 60. And so I would have thought that guy would have snuffed it a long time ago. So he held on for a long time. Well done, Lynyrd Skynyrd. Which is, you know, that had to have been just the strangest mixed blessing to go through life with the name Lynyrd Skynyrd. Because it's one of those things where he probably just suffered through, like, every jackass in the world going, hey, you're like that band, the Lynyrd Skynyrd band. And then he must have occasionally said, well, actually, the band is named after me, which then no one would, of course, believe. You know, that's just like the worst thing, where you are the famous guy, and then no one will believe that you're the famous guy unless you actually just, like, carry around a laminated thing in your wallet from the band saying, like, this is the guy.
It is a pretty hilarious thing, though. I've always loved that, though, that they named their band after the guy. It's like, you know, it's like because everybody has a teacher that annoyed them.
Totally, yeah.
And just the idea of actually getting famous with your band that's called Mr. Chomsky or something like that is fairly hilarious.
Well, especially because as the band always told it, well, and as he references this, they always said that he was just kind of a hard ass. The way that, was he a gym coach?
Is that what it said?
Because I think gym coaches are notorious for sort of being, you know...
Basketball coach and gym teacher.
For being hard cases. You know, them and the shop teacher. Because the shop teacher's always one of the go, quit screwing around, you know, the guys. So he didn't like long hair. He was apparently just a bit of a hard ass anyway, according to the band. Also, he didn't like rock and roll. That was the other thing. Is he was more of a jazz fan, apparently. A jazz and country fan, go figure.
Apparently, though, they said that he eventually actually became friends with a couple of members of the band.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, because, time passes and things change and whatever. But I do like the idea that there was some rock-hating teacher who then had a famous rock band named after him. It is sort of awesome. So, all right. That's fantastic. There you go. There's your Snuffwatch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Let's do, we'll do this. We'll do one more. We'll do the Week in Geek, and we'll come back on the other side, and we'll have this porn discussion that I just made a note to myself. Talk porn. Because here's the other thing, is I actually had, perhaps unsurprisingly, I myself had a porn question, something that came up while you were talking about the clown porn. I actually wrote down a question myself, so we can do sort of, it'll be a bit of a porn roundtable.
One of our listeners, by the way, does say, I'm sorry, is Dawn complaining that this clown porn was not based in reality? She has a problem with a ladder and basement scenario, but the whole clown porn thing is completely believable?
Well, but it sounds like that wasn't even the clown porn segment. That was with the Droog guys, right?
Yeah.
That was with the Clockwork Orange, which you can also argue is not necessarily believable as such, but...
I will say, though, that yes, the acting also throughout this was just horrible.
Yeah, acting. See, Well, never mind. Oh, we'll wait. Let's do one more here, and then we'll do the Week in Geek.
A Toledo police officer celebrating his 25th anniversary on the force was shot Monday afternoon by a fellow veteran officer at the Scott Park District Precinct in Toledo, Ohio. Police Chief Brian Navari is classifying the incident as a shooting investigation. He's not calling it an accidental shooting and not calling it purposeful, but there is investigating to be done. The shooting took place at 1:37 p.m. Monday afternoon in an office inside the substation. A service weapon was involved. The two officers involved are both veteran officers, police officials said. Shot was 53-year-old Sergeant Jeffrey Bechtel. Sergeant Bechtel suffered a non-life-threatening gunshot wound. Chief Navari said the sergeant was shot in the upper portion of the right arm. The accidental shooting happened at a shift change, and both officers were on duty. The police department said Sergeant Bechtel was transferred to Toledo Hospital for treatment. Monday is the police sergeant's 25th anniversary on the force. The shooting incident is under investigation.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't forget to join us tomorrow. That is Wednesday, when our guests will include Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. And Friday, this just in, Friday, we'll be joined by our good friend Big Jim Willig. He's going to be performing this coming Saturday. So we'll have more details on that. He'll be in the studio with us on Friday. Still on the way, we have Hick Watch. Monkey Watch, for which I will be obliged to make noises with my mouth. We also have the top five coming up later on. Top five sleaziest songs to receive mainstream radio airplay. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here on the Emerson News Network.
Greetings, programs. This is Aaron Duran of GeekInTheCity.com, and this is your week in Geek. First, now you've got a chance at traveling to parallel universes, or at the very least, winning the next sci-fi costume contest, as props and sets from Stargate SG-1 go up for auction on September 25th and 26th. You finally have a chance at owning that Serpent Guard helm that would just totally tie the room together. Next, Saturday, October 2nd, Free Geek celebrates 10 years of computer and tech service in Portland with a big ol' nerdy party. From 8 p.m. to 1 a.m., partake in a techie costume contest, DIY tables from scrap, live music, dancing, and a fantastically geeky trashin' show by Junk to Funk. All on October 2nd at Free Geek. Finally, October 9th, the Alter Ego Society hosts the 4th annual Heroes and Villains Ceasefire Party. From 8 p.m. to 1 a.m., both sides of the heroic spectrum will descend upon Paradise Dance Studio for a night of games, contests, live music, and a super team-up mingling. Tickets are $7 for those in costume, $10 for plainclothes Mondays, and no, secret identities do not count. All proceeds go to PAIR, a local organization who supports homeless and transitional youth through creative mentoring. It all happens Saturday, October 9th. I am Aaron Duran of GeekInTheCity.com, and that was your week in Geek.
You're listening to The Rick Emerson Show. This is the Emerson News Network.
Jokes and a women leg of frisky. By 5 o'clock in the evening, every bastard there was pissed. Pretty well gone away, there's nothing left to say. Farewell to New York City, boys, the Boston NPA. He took them out with a woolen cloud, and I often heard him say, I'm a free-born man of the USA. He fought the champ in Pittsburgh, and he slushed him to the ground. He took on Tiny Tartanella, and only went one round. He never had no time for rights, for drink or dice or hoard. But he never threw a fight when the fight was right, so they sent him to the war. Pretty well gone away, there's nothing left to say. With Staunch and Joe and an Aaron Goldman loves in America. The calling of the rosary, Spanish wine from far away. I'm a free-born man, love the USA. Yeah! Goodbye. I remember how I swore that I'd come back to you one day. And as the sunset came to meet the evening on a hill, I told you I'd always love you, I always did, I always will. Fairly well gone away, there's nothing left to say. But say adieu to your eyes as blue as the woods are in the bay. To beat Jim Dwyer, the man of war, who was up and heard to say, I'm a free-born man of the USA. I'm a free-born man of the USA. I'm a free-born man of the USA.
The Rick Emerson radio program here on the Emerson News Network. That was like a triple reference there, by the way. Have you gotten to, how many episodes into The Wire are you? Presuming you're still watching The Wire.
I'm still
assuming the whole thing wasn't a fabrication
five,
to begin with. All right,
five,
so you're like
five or six episodes. I got sidetracked by Sons of Anarchy. I can only watch much TV.
No, it's fine. It's okay. And I suppose at least you weren't sidetracked by, like, Jersey Shore or something. You know, I'm sorry. I just, this is whole Ace of Cakes marathon, and I'm not able to watch The Wire right now. I'm sorry.
The new season of America's Next Top Model started, and I couldn't keep up with The Wire.
Don't knock America's Next Top Model. Look, I didn't make those girls cry for no reason. I wonder if I've actually missed the cycle of America's Next Top Model where I did some of that, you know, because I was at one of those pre-screenings they did.
No, you missed it.
Oh, damn.
That was like two ago.
Because I wonder if there was, did anybody from Portland make it on? Do you watch that show?
No.
Okay. I'll have to check with, I think Sarah watches it. I have to, she comes in today. Because I'll have to see, because there was low-grade whisperings that there was somebody from Portland who was going to make it on to, I think, Cycle 14 or whatever, because they don't call them seasons anymore, but the Cycle 14 of that show.
That's because it's on, like, three different times a year or something.
So
don't they do that with Survivor, too,
and
I
South
think.
Park.
Because Survivor will come in and be like, it's series 20 of Survivor. I'm like, yeah, how can it be season 20 of Survivor? And I've never seen a single one.
I think South Park has been on for 13 years, which makes me feel freaking old, by the way. I think South Park has been on for 13 years, but I believe that it's like season 17 or 18 or something, which is even more confusing because that's like, that didn't make any sense because it's not like they're doing two a year. Like 18 yeah. seasons in like 16 years, then it's like, I just don't even know what to. That's like how the Mad Magazine had this very carefully constructed system that Bill Gaines came up with where, and you may have noticed this when you were a child if you subscribed to the Mad Magazine, he had this very carefully constructed system because it dated back to the comic book era when retailers would take any comic book that was the slightest bit dated off the shelves because they always wanted to look like they had the new merch. So he had this whole algorithm worked out to where no Mad Magazine was ever actually on sale during the month that was on the cover. So it was like the cover always said like April when it was like January. So this is the whole thing became, and it's like that's the way with South Park. I can never tell when anything's actually on. It didn't really matter. The point is that you may have already seen this at some point in The Wire, but you'll see it later. It's not a spoiler because it happens several times. But there's this whole thing where when a cop has died, they do the traditional laying out of the body at Kavanaugh's, which is an Irish pub nearby, and that Pogue song, "Body of an American," is they do, and everybody does. They all have a round, and everybody sings the Pogue song before the guy's taken to the funeral home. So that's like a little triple thing there because you had the bar and the funeral home. And the Wire thing going on.
Did you catch my weird itchy thing?
You know, just now when I was scratching my shoulder.
Yeah,
I got over
twitching and
over here on my left hand side. I got like it feels like a mosquito bite or something, or perhaps it's those bed bugs that are apparently invading Portland.
You know, it works for that. Your pen scratch yourself with.
Yeah, but then I'm just don't take this the wrong way. But then I'm just you. I mean, more importantly, I'll see. Now I'm itching everywhere. Thanks a lot, Don.
You were already twisting around and scratching.
Yeah, but just
stuff
in
before
one
I said
place,
anything.
And now I'm just itching everywhere.
Because of the bed,
makes
the bed
me
bugs.
Itchy. You know, because here's the thing: if I start scratching myself with implements, then it's not so much I am you that I'm you. It's that I'm a friend. I won't mention him by name, but there's a friend of mine who he has this whole like. It's nobody that is known to the show now. He's a friend of mine, but I think he listens, so I don't want to call him out in front of anybody. But I worked with him years ago, and it's a thing before I really knew what the term obsessive compulsive was. Like, I just thought, like, well, yeah, that guy has nervous tics. That's what we used to say when I was growing up. He had nervous tics. He had this whole thing for cleaning out his ears, though. He was like a constant, like, you know, guys were always like kind of scratching the inside of their ears. But this is it's not even gross, it's just weird. His whole thing for constantly cleaning out the inside of his ears was not even to use, like, a Q-tip, you know, or to just be, like, scratching with his hand or whatever. His whole thing was he would clean out the inside of his ears with, like, things and ballpoint pens, chief among them. He would sometimes take the ballpoint pen apart and take out the little ink tube, the little, you know, like, ink cylinder inside, the straw, and actually be cleaning his ears with that. Pencils or like the end of like, you know, like the handle on a spoon or something just inside his ear. I swear to God, I actually, and I didn't mention it because I'm like, did you ever notice that Tom cleans the inside of his ears a lot and he does it with like things like pens and pencils? I never mentioned it until I swear to God we were at a radio station one time and I saw him scraping like, it was just the very, very inside. Like not, it wasn't deep inside. It was just like, you know, the outer part of the inside. Mm-hmm. When I swear to God, I'm scraping at the inside of his ear with an X-Acto knife. And I said, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, cleaning my ear, it's itchy. And I was just like, put the X-Acto, find something, get a Q-tip for the love of, that's one of those things where a guy's going to open a door at the wrong moment and it's like X-Acto knife through your brain. Anyway, if you get an X-Acto knife through your brain, it may not make a mess, but you won't be able to clean your own carpet, that's for sure.
No.
So you want to have this number written down, 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. That's how you contact Mr. Michael Beatty. He is the owner of The Cleaning Solution. They are a Portland business. When I say Portland business, I don't just mean they're based here. I don't just mean that they operate here, although they are and they do. It means they keep their money here as well, and you know, not just because they advertise. Michael Beatty actually buys his supplies, his accessories, all of his equipment, all of that stuff whenever possible. You know, he buys that from other Portland businesses. So it is it's friends helping friends and neighbors helping neighbors. And more importantly, it facilitates your laziness as an American because you need no longer clean you know, anything. I mean, except yourself, and there's probably people who do that for you, too.
And your ears.
And your ears.
Clean your own ears.
Yeah, he's not going to touch your ears. He's not going to F with that. Upholstery, stone, tile, marble, hardwood entryway, carpet, especially anything, linoleum. I mean, like, if you're so damn lazy you can't even clean your own linoleum, which I certainly understand, he'll do that for you. 971-533-3211. He'll do it at your place of business as well as at your home. So whether it's a residential or office, he will take care of that for you. So just write down this number in case you need it, or if you need to get your carpet clean, keep it looking as good as the day you bought it. 971-533-3211. That is Mr. Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution, a proud sponsor of The Rick Emerson Show. Please tell him you heard it here on the Emerson News Network. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's, what is today, Tuesday still?
It is.
All right. Still to come, Hick Watch, Monkey Watch coming up. And the top five. So I'm printing this out right now. See if it's actually... Here we go. I got it in my hand. I got the top five. The top five sleaziest songs ever to achieve mainstream, or to receive, anyway, mainstream radio airplay. These are the top five sleaziest songs that were played. And this is not something where it was just sort of, you know, played once. These are things that, these are songs the whole family knows, Tom. So that's coming up later on, the top five. That'll be later on this hour. And I believe this is actually yours right there.
Oh, that's where that went.
All right. It's 503-505-6964. What headlines can we expect as the program progresses today, Don Taylor?
Well, we have a writer who was struck and killed by an Amtrak train, and a prison power failure, which canceled visits to the prison. And, of course, in the text box, we have a request. Damn, we have had a lot of breaks today. Can we get back to the butt sex?
Well, okay, but only because you really asked for it in the most strident of tones. It's funny, because I was just about to say, back to porn. so you took all the clown porn home. Can I ask you this? Did you, when you were watching the clown porn, did you... okay, first of all, you probably didn't watch that first scene again, because you'd already been subjected to that here on Friday.
Right.
Because we never saw the completion of that scene, but I'm assuming it's sort of...
No, and I realized that I didn't... Yeah, I realized later, as something of a completist, I didn't go back and... Watch how it ended.
Yeah. How it all came out.
Yeah.
But here's the only reason.
I'm sure I can guess.
Yeah, but see, here's the only thing. Is that I hate to be... look, I don't want to traffic in crudity or anything, because that's not what Rick Emerson does. This is a clean program.
You could have expected one thing, and it turned out it was just confetti.
I was going to say silly string. See, that's my thing. Because, okay, see, I'm glad we're on the same page there. Because don't you wonder in, like, some small way if it was sort of a... Wah, wah, and then it's just like a pink silly string kind of shooting out? I'm not trying to be horrible. I'm just... I honestly wondered. It was a thing that I really was curious about. See, now I feel like I have to watch it just to find out.
I think you might be giving them credit for more cleverness than they're...
Well,
actually...
speaking of credit for more cleverness, so you were talking about the fact that there was a scene that took in this clown porn film that took... And by the way, we are the only broadcast, like, in the world today talking about clown porn, like, this much. I don't think that there's any other show on the air today that's talking about clown porn.
Dissecting the merits
than, like, once.
Of the clown porn.
I mean, really, it's that is what sets us apart, is, you know, is that we were exploring the many facets of this particular brand of erotica. First of all, as a side note, don't you wonder who the audience for this is? Because it can't be clown. It can't be people afraid of clowns. It doesn't seem like there's that many people with a clown fetish. Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's women, because it's like humping a clown isn't like humping a guy in a uniform. Like you were talking about, were you saying you were here the other day when the UPS guy came by?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, there's that big box of stuff from Think Geek. We should open that later on.
We should.
But you were like, you know, the UPS guy came by and we were noting that, you know, we should put up a sign so they don't come into the studio during the show. And you said, not that I mind talking to a guy in a hot UPS uniform or whatever. And that's a whole separate issue, because I'm not saying it's not real or whatever. I mean, it clearly is. I'm saying that as a man, like, I don't get the whole thing with guys in uniform. Like, which is fine. It's not like everything. I have to get everything. I mean, I understand, sort of, but I'm saying I can't identify with that. Like,
no,
I
can explain it only for myself, if you want to know.
Yes.
Which could be, we might be...
I'm assuming it's a daddy thing, as it always is.
My dad was a fireman.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was a cop or something.
He was a cop before I was born.
Ah,
I see. But by the time I was born, he was a fireman.
This makes so much sense.
Yeah. And okay. So I spent a lot of my formative childhood days being around a large man wearing like a uniform with a a shiny leather belt and black shoes and a badge, you know, and what can I say?
Well, I suppose this is probably the time when I should point out that my mother, my sister, and my wife are all nurses. So you can draw your own conclusions there, I suppose.
But that also explains the thing, because I have this fear and this real problem with authority figures and with cops. And so whenever I'm around an actual police officer, I am such a jangle of like conflicting things going on, because it's like I fear and despise like policemen just on a real, because I grew up in the Los Angeles area.
Right.
So there's this LAPD thing.
Sure.
I have this response.
Don't beat me.
Yeah,
yeah.
Please don't kill me.
Yeah.
And then I have the daddy thing. And then there's like, yeah, there's some kind of weird Freudian sexy thing going on that goes there too. And I get near them and it's like, and my brain is just going, uniform, badge, smell of sweaty man and leather, cop, fear. Anger, and it's like everything just starts to shortwave, and it's a horrible. So I live in constant fear of being pulled over by a cop, because my brain just short circuits.
Because then, because if you get pulled over by a cop, you know, the funny thing about that is that if that ever does happen. You really are going to turn into, and I don't know why of all days I've decided to not have the porn music handy. This is like my instant karma here for not having this, because I was just, you know, you were, it is going to be that thing where just, officer, is there any way that I can convince you not to give me a ticket? Is there anything I can do to perhaps, you know, and then it'll just, I don't have it now. I was reaching for the whole wah, wah, wah bed that I don't have. But it's that whole thing. When is the last time you got pulled over?
Oh, it's years.
You probably drive
years
very carefully just because you don't want to be pulled over.
Yes. Yes,
that would
be
my guess. The same reason that I do. That I, man, it's like, that's why it was so unlike me, at least as an adult, to not have my tags renewed, you know, to have expired tags, because I do everything I can not to have the man pull me over, because it's just the worst experience on earth, and I'm always afraid they're going to find some outstanding ticket, or they're going to throw me in the clink, or whatever. Somebody in the text box says, when is Dawn's birthday? I feel the need to send a policeman stripper to the studio. No. Please don't see. And that's,
and again, that's like a fake clown.
I was just going to say
not the same thing.
Without even asking you, I knew that you would not find a cop stripper to be the same thing, because it's fake. Because it is, because you know in your mind that he's not really going to beat you.
Did I tell you? Did I tell you that there was a lady cop stripper at Thanksgiving last year? My husband's family Thanksgiving.
Why? Why would that be the case ever, anywhere, at anyone's Thanksgiving?
Because it was his, he has an uncle who is like only about 5 years older than him, because of one of those, you know, weird familial breeding things.
Oh, trust me, I know.
And the uncle is a police officer. He's like a training officer and a detective and all kinds of fancy things in Washington State. And it was his birthday. And so somebody got the bright idea. Apparently somebody... one of the relatives works with a woman who has a side business doing like strippergram things, and one of her things is police officer. So she showed up. It was his birthday, but it was also everyone was gathered for Thanksgiving.
And so was she just like coming straight from work or something?
I don't know exactly how they made the arrangement. We were having Thanksgiving, and it was after dinner, and there was a knock at the door, and this incredibly busty woman in this cheesy looking faux policeman's uniform shows up and says, I've had some complaints that there's a lot of noise going on here.
Oh.
And she came in and they started playing this boom waka chicka music, and I was like going, this is like the strangest Thanksgiving I've ever experienced.
Okay, see, so I just, it's like a full-on Arrested Development thing. It's like the hot cops have suddenly have arrived. When you were describing it, I thought, so she is the girlfriend of...
She's like a co-worker of someone who's one of the relatives.
Who was at dinner. See, I thought you meant that... I was sort of thinking that she was like there as a date or something.
No. No, they actually... They found out she does this on the side, and they actually had her come by as a favor.
That's so much worse. See, I was thinking it was sort of a...
Swinging handcuffs around
no,
and
no,
stuff.
No,
and
it was, no, no, no. See, I was thinking that like you're sitting around the dinner table, and it's like you and the aunt, the uncle, and grandpa, and mom, and whoever, and like Fred, and Fred's girlfriend... She sidelines as a stripper. Don't mind her. She just came from a gig, and she's sitting there with like her handcuffs and her baton, going, "Sorry, I had to stop by a football watching party earlier on. Forgive my outfit." But no, they actually like had her come and do her thing of like, I've been told there's too much, legally too much fun happening. There's a criminal amount of joy happening in this household. Happy Thanksgiving. Look at my boobs. Or whatever. Yeah. And did she actually come in and start stripping?
She danced around. And then they did this whole thing where I think they were going to, like, put handcuffs on him, and he would not allow that to happen because, again, he's an actual police officer. But it was more.
You should
more
film your family gatherings.
This is even my family. My family is like just straight out trashy. My father's family is like semi trashy but fun loving. So it's kind of,
that's so bizarre.
It was bizarre, and I was just, you know, sitting there going, and I was worried about being on my best behavior.
Seriously, well, you're no longer the creepy crazy one. I mean, like, ever. You know, it's like the bar is just set so unimaginably high. Well, it's like I have that. There's that weird age thing in my family too, where I have a niece who is, you know, how do I put this? My younger brother James, he actually has nieces and nephews who are like way older than he is, because it's like because of this whole spread out thing in my family. So I understand that weirdness. The stripper weirdness, like, it takes the whole family thing to a whole different. What's weird about this is just this morning, for reasons that I can't really quantify. Do you ever just, like, you sit there and you're brushing your teeth or something, and you start thinking about something, like, for no reason? There's no reason that a particular memory pops into your head that you can think of. It's just there. So, you know what I was thinking of is when I was in high school, a friend of mine graduated a couple years before I did. I think I was a sophomore, and he was a senior, maybe. And, well, he was graduating, but I think I must have been a sophomore. But I went to his graduation party, and I'm like 15, 16, and this is like his graduation party, like at his house, and it's his mom and his dad and, like, I think his grandparents and, like, friends from the neighborhood who knew him when he was pink and hairless or whatever. And then his dad got him a stripper, and it was like the stripper shows up, and it's like, I'm 15 and I've never been in a place where there's a stripper. I mean, everybody else must have seen it coming a mile away, because some chick shows up with, like, a tight shirt on and, like, carrying a boombox.
Yeah.
And set it down, and there's a whole, like, oh, what could this be? Oh, son. Todd, you better get in here.
That is creepy.
And I remember just thinking, like, I don't know what's going on. What's happening? And then the next thing, as you said, there's like the inch, 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 inch on the jukebox. And, you know, and then suddenly she's like shaking her cakes at everybody. And meanwhile, there's like an old guy, like, eating some pie across the way. And congratulations on your graduation. Do you have any Maalox? And meanwhile, there's a woman, like, shaking her melons at you. And, you know, and it's like, and I'm 15, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I have to leave, you know, or whatever. And it was just all very confusing. The stripper in the home is just, like, it's a weird, strange way to make a living. And it's embarrassing for everyone involved.
The stripper thing also came at the end of an evening where, while we were having Thanksgiving dinner, something came up about fears, things that you're afraid of. I think, honest to God, I think clowns came up, and I mentioned that I had the clown phobia. And the cop uncle guy said that he was deathly afraid of snakes. And then he told this story about how he and, like, his partner had to go out into the desert, and they were doing something in the desert and looking for something. And I don't even remember the entire story, but it had something to do with a snake in a hole, and the snake started to come out of the hole, and he just was so freaked out by it, he unloaded his service revolver into the hole and blew the living hell out of the snake, and then had to go back to the station covered with bits of snake guts.
That's
like all over
awesome.
Himself. And I'm just sitting, and I was sitting there at that point, and I looked up after that story, and I said, this is the best Thanksgiving ever.
I wasn't even there, and I don't disagree.
And then later, stripper.
That's awesome. My question about porn is real is more basic. You were talking about the clown porn. How there's a sequence that ostensibly takes place in a basement because there's a ladder. But you said that it was like the ladder was just leaning against the walls. They were like faking the basement thing, and not even like a flight of artistic fancy. It was just like they were too cheap to get a basement.
Yeah, guy would climb down, then they'd like cut to somebody's facial reaction, then another guy climbing down, then shoot to the girl, then other guy climbing down, you know, trying to pretend they were all coming down the ladder.
Here's the thing that I think about all the time, actually. You know, I wonder about in porn. This is maybe what makes me a dull human being in some way. I always wonder, like, whose house they're at, especially if it's a really nice house. I'm not talking about, like, there's a lot of, like, especially in the internet now, there's a lot of that so-called, it's like a pro-am porn. And pro-am, as I've come to find out, that is one of those terms. It's where it's not like Vivid Video making it. Like, it's not some billion-dollar company that's on the strip somewhere. But it's also not, like, a sex tape as such, where it's like two people are humping it out and then they break up and the guy in a fit of pique just says, well, screw you. I'll upload that to the Intertron so everyone can see it. But it's where, like, it is, you know, it's like a pay site, or it's, I guess, porn that is done for commercial purpose. People are making money on it, but they're not like a business. It's just like some guys, you know, who like form like a little company, not unlike our company, Dawn, but with less talking and more humping. For example, now, here's the thing I did not know, and this probably won't mean anything to you, but some of you gentlemen out there who perhaps have consumed adult material in the last 10 years or so online, there was, I guess, until recently, we missed the window for this. There's apparently a real famous site like this, it's where just like a couple who started like filming themselves humping, sticking it on Usenet, as we used to call it back in the day, and apparently got a big reaction, and they thought, I wonder if people would pay to see my wife humping me. Let's find out. And they started doing it, and people started paying, and it was some chick. I don't even know if I ever knew her real name, but it's called Wifey's World. Is the name of this site, and it's like some big boobed woman who she and her husband made all these hump videos, and they were just sticking them on like message boards like 15 years ago, and they got this huge response, and then they just started selling it. There's a whole thing in Wired about this. They started selling them, and then they put up a website, and it was like one of the first really, really profitable amateur porn sites that was done for profit. In other words, it wasn't done by a company, and they lived in Oregon City. And I guess eventually they moved, and the reason they moved is because their neighbors found out who they were. Because somebody at a supermarket somewhere said, like, hey, I know you. I just saw you humping a guy on the... And then, like, word spread through the tiny little, you know, the little Peyton place that is Oregon City.
They don't have a lot to talk about there.
Yeah, and then like, one of the neighbors, apparently, undoubtedly some blue-haired woman who's unable to satisfy her husband, complained about it, called, like, not the cops, but called, like, whoever it is you call about that, saying that, like, they weren't zoned to have a business, much less an adult business in their neighborhood. And here this chick is, like, humping her husband, and they're making, like... And they were making like $500,000 a year. I mean, it
and
was like
still
this,
living in Oregon City.
No, they moved. They were like, that's the thing. Is like the neighbors, some tight ass woman complained and said like, our neighbors are making porn films and they're doing it for profit. And this isn't a business district, and they're, you know, it's an adult business. And so there was all this like heat from the community. And so they're like, you know what? F it. We're making $500,000 a year. We're moving to Phoenix. And so they moved to Arizona. Anyway, so that's a whole fascinating category to me, is just the people who are just making films on their own and then making money on it.
Well, like I saw the one movie I believe I told you about. It was called The Effing Elvises.
Yeah.
And and that was and one of the guys who, and it was just, you know, a woman having sex with like five guys in these cheesy Elvis wigs. But one of the guys, the producer of the film, was one of the Elvises.
Yeah.
And he seemed to be having such a good time. And I just figured, I bet the only reason he made this movie was so that he could actually have sex with a porn actress.
Totally.
And be in a movie.
Yeah.
Because he seemed to really be enjoying himself.
Well, you got to imagine the overhead for making that, for being like a pro-am porn company, where it's just like, where you're not pretending that it's homemade as such. Like, you're not trying to pass it off as like, you know, some leaked video that made its way to the internet. But it's also not like glossy with a lot of props and whatever. It's basically...
Like the Elvis video, it was just in one large living room with like a sectional sofa. That was the entire set, with some living room with a sectional sofa.
And like, you'll see a lot of this. Here's the other, and let me just tell you, of all of the regrets that I have in my life, can I just tell you one of my deepest, most profound regrets?
Sure, Rick. I mean, it's only you and me.
Of all of the things I rue and lament, I can't believe there are times when I do things and they are so unbelievably friggin' stupid.
You were one of the guys in the Elvis video, weren't you?
Yes. No. But it's close to that, actually. There's times I'm just so goddamn stupid that I cannot believe. It's like, even by my standards, I do things that are so colossally dumb. We used to have a listener who ran a porn site. And it was the so-called gonzo porn. And gonzo porn is this. What that basically means is, the gonzo porn is where, just as in gonzo journalism, where the journalist is part of the action, inserts himself into the story. In gonzo porn, it's where the guy behind the camera is saying like, hey, so we're here with Roxanne. And then he swings the camera on. Roxanne, say hello to everybody. And Roxanne waves at the camera. And it is like, again, it's not that they're not going to pass it off as like homemade, but it's not like high budget. It is where everybody is clear about what's going on. And what's going on is, hey, we've paid this girl $2,000 and she's going to hump me here on camera so you guys can watch. Who's into that? And then Roxanne giggles. And then the camera guy either holds the camera Or like he has a buddy hold the camera while he like gets it on and then they upload
it. Like there's that whole series for years with the, I can't even remember the guy's name, but the guy who does that, and he just, he drives around places and finds,
on the prowl.
Ostensibly finds girls.
Yeah.
To do it, but you know,
yeah, or on, well, I guess on the prowl was the thing they do in Boogie Nights where he's like,
yeah,
on the lookout or whatever,
it's something like that.
But gonzo porn is very, and like they're not pretending that she's a girl off the street and that it's like whatever. I mean, you, or in other words, they're not pretending that she's not, that it's not like a gig for her. They're like, hey, you know, this girl's gonna hump us and we're gonna film it and everybody's gonna have a great time. It's a win-win. Let's go. So we had a listener who, along with another guy, had this gonzo porn company. And they were in, I don't think they were here. I think they were like maybe in, like in the, maybe in Northern California. But it's like, it was him and a buddy, and they had this little LLC they formed, this company. And they would find these chicks. They put up these ads, like, do adult modeling. And girls would respond, and they'd say, look, the adult modeling, it's going to have, you know, there's a sexual element, so yes or no. And if she said no, she left. And she'd, yes, they'd negotiate if she said yes. And they would pay some girl like $1,500 or whatever to get it on with some, you know, the guy. And I guess they took turns or something. It's like, you film one, I'll film one. And so one guy would film, and the other guy would just get his basket weaved by this girl. And then they would upload, and he was a listener, and so he's like, hey, Rick, I thought you'd like to know my friend and I started this porn company. And I'm like, that's awesome. And so we'd had him on like once a week to tell us, because it was just fascinating. And I cannot believe that I didn't keep these, but he was like, hey, I'll send you like, you know, login and a password. So he sent us like, you know, like a free, you know, like a membership or whatever. And Sarah was just grossed out by the whole thing, especially when, and this is where the retard me thing comes in. And if you were listening at the time, this is maybe 10 years ago, if you were listening, you know that I'm telling the truth. I'm not making this up. He started having the girls like say things like, you know, like about the show. He's like, say Rick Emerson. And the girl who's like getting stuffed is going like, Rick Emerson, you know, while the guy. At one point, I just said like real like jokingly, I'm like, yeah, have one of them say Sarah's name. And so like, I'll be goddamned if like the next chick on the porn site didn't like moan Sarah while she was like getting, you know, nailed.
Oh, God.
Which Sarah, I thought Sarah was going to vomit when we played the audio from that on the air. It was a pre-Janet Jackson time when you could do that sort of thing in radio. Mm. And like an idiot, I just like never kept any of it. How many times that you just see? How many times in your life do you have a porn actress, but a chicken like an actual porn film, which is being produced and made for profit and is on the internet, like saying Rick Emerson? Like never.
Never.
And I've totally lost track of the guy now. That's the thing, is like if the site is gone, I don't know where the guy is. It's not like I spent a lot of time looking for it or whatever, but it's like it just, I went there one day and it was just gone. So I just, of all of the regrets, the fact that I did not keep porn material where, like, the porn actress is actually talking, like, about this radio show. Like, I don't know what was going on in my head. But my thing with the basement porn is, like, it's not even, like, when they're in, like, some sleazy motel room or, like, these guys were at, like, some studio apartment. When they're at a really nice house in a porn film, yeah. I think, like, whose house is that? And is it a sort of like, hey, you let us use your house and, like, you know, we'll let you, like, you know, get one off with a girl, like, later on, you know, or what? I always wonder how that works, or if it's more structured than that. Like, if there is a sort of lawyer and a realtor, and they do arrange some business deal that is all quantified and it's all legal for rental of the house. That is a thing that fascinates me, is the side logistics of that whole business.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well, in any event.
That is interesting.
So your question, though, about, and I finally found it, too late do I find the porn music. But having watched the clown porn, was it in the one we watched where the clown, where the alternate entry sex?
I believe there was some of that in there. I think that's my thing, is I think that.
Are you saying it's like in your opinion, it's a recent phenomenon in general, like in the sense that it's a thing that guys like apparently like want to do, or is it a recent phenomenon just for it to be on film?
I think over the course of, because my husband, again, having he never throws anything away,
does he keep all his porn?
He, not anymore, but when I married him, he had...
Was he told that that was not acceptable?
No, he just decided at some point that he didn't really need it anymore.
Well, it was on VHS probably, too, so I mean...
Yes, a lot of it
point?
Was, yes.
Can't watch that.
But the thing is that there's this evolution of porn where,
yes,
you know, way back in the olden times, just watching two people have any sex at all on
right.
film was exciting.
I mean, see your ankles.
Well, yeah. And then, I don't know, and then there's this point at which, like, you know, the whole either entry area and became optional, and it was exciting, I guess. And then there became this point where now, I guess, porn actresses are just asked, you know, immediately, do you do double penetration? It's like,
right.
And it's like, you don't? Well, too bad.
I'm sorry for you. Get out.
And yeah. It's like, okay, but it seems like all porn now, all heterosexual porn now has to have anal sex.
Yeah.
It's like, it's necessary. In fact, it seems to be preferred over.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? Why?
Well, let me just say for me, no, for me. I don't mind saying that. As much as it may make you like uncomfortable, you know, we've had this discussion before about the bringing up, you know, our own behavior in whatever realm, and just that it gives us like the oogie feeling, as Annie Wilkes would say. I just got to say, you know, as far as like doing, watching, you know, the concept, I'm just not with that. And it's, you know, whatever. And I mean, whatever you're into. And I will actually say, how do I put this? I would say that in the past, and you know, and I don't even need to say in the past because it's not even really, it doesn't. Anyway, I'll say that I've known a couple of women who've actually like been very vocal about the fact, and I mean vocal like just in the sense that they, you know, whatever, just like not, that have actually just said that like they're really into that. And I'm like, and I would always ask like, well, what? Because is this one of those, because here's the thing that women have that guys don't have. Women will sometimes do this thing. Women will say like, well, you know, like, I just find it, you know, really hot if the guy finds it hot. Like, just really, which I can understand. And I'm not saying that, like, men shouldn't care about whatever's, like, getting the chick off or whatever. But a lot of women, I think, more so than men, will, like, find something hot just because it, like, if it gets the guy off, like, in and of itself, it then becomes de facto sexy to the chick. And I was like, is it that sort of a thing? Like, where you're just into, like, you know, pleasing, you're into serving the man or whatever, and, you know, whatever, and that's the aspect that you like, is that you're just, like, giving it up to whatever he wants. And they were like, no. It's like, they were just like, you know, in terms of just the physical sensation, I knew one woman, I had just a female friend, a platonic friend of mine who actually said, so I have only her word to go on here, but she said that just in a strictly physical sensation sense, she actually preferred that to the normal man and woman missionary, whatever. And I just said, like, I just told him, like, you know, whatever. Like, it's your ass. I don't. I'm not gonna disagree because that's on you. But for me, I'm just saying no. A, no for me. B, because it's a no for me. Like, a thing I don't want to do for the most part is a thing I also don't want to watch. If as you just said, like, if it's not, if I can't, you'll forgive me, insert myself into the scene, then it's like, I don't really want to be watching it, because then it's like, I'm just watching a depiction of, like, with the porn sites, occasionally, here's the other thing, too, it's like, if you're looking at porn online, occasionally, there'll be, like, you go to some site, and it's like, they list all the categories of, like, you know, girl, guy, girl, you know, the whatever, the anal, missionary, you know, there's the whole food thing, messy porn where there's just chicks being covered in food, which is another thing I don't get. But occasionally, though, they'll have all the categories of porn, and then there will just be some horrific category that, like, I don't even want to know about, or, you know, prolapsed colons, you know, and then it's like a picture, but then there's like a thumbnail, you know, picture of it, and like, no, and it's like Sarah and I trying to close pictures of, like, the guy with the eel fingers, you know, or like a sea creature or something, and you're like, I don't even want to know that there's people who are into that kind of porn.
Yeah, I went to Fantasy Video with Patrick once early in our relationship, doing that whole, well, let's look at porn together. And I've learned there's just too many pictures of too many things,
yeah,
and too many parts, and they're all just like vying for my attention simultaneously, and I find it just off-putting and upsetting. But I'm trying to soldier through, and we're looking at things, and I'm walking down the aisle at Fantasy, and of course at Fantasy they have these things delineated into sections,
sure,
but they're all like on the same aisle,
yeah,
and then it's like, so if you walk too far, like, in one direction,
one section ends.
Yeah, you go from, like, something normal to something horrible, and you may not realize you have.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's other people there looking at stuff, and I had that experience where I was like, trying not to look, too much of that. Oh, I don't know where I am. What? Oh, here's a man looking at porn. Well, you know, that's what we're all here for. Nothing. And then I realized, oh, God, he's looking at lactating pregnant women. Ah! And then I was just horrified for him,
yeah,
by him,
well, then you went
by
to, like,
sex in general.
Yeah, like, what is up with that guy and what is his... Well, it's like the whole...
Now I just want to go wait in the car.
And never have sex again.
Yeah.
I remember actually seeing... I don't know, we were talking about this with Sarah and Greg when we were on Fun Employment Radio, maybe last Friday or whenever that was. But we were talking about the whole, like, what was the first porn film you ever saw? And I started off with the classic. I swear to God, in one night, in one viewing, There was like a bunch of us guys like at my friend Virgil's house, and we were like way too young to even really appreciate porn. We were like 11 or 12 or something, but he's like, hey, I found porn, before we even really knew what it was for. And it was Deep Throat and Debbie Does Dallas. Like, it was the dual classics. So I saw this right out of the gate, but...
That's like your first movie being, you know...
Citizen Kane and Lawrence of Arabia. Exactly. I mean, that's really what it was. But I remember watching these and just thinking, like, A, like, I don't... You know, and I think I was. It was even, like, maybe before puberty, maybe. I don't even know when that happens. Like, 11, 12 I must have been, so who knows? I mean, I don't know how that works. But kids today, I don't know when that puberty thing happens. But I remember watching it and just thinking, like, well, I don't really get this, and I don't understand. Like, what is the deal? And then watching it, I remember actually a friend of mine going, well, that's really gross. I thought sex was, like, cool. And it did seem, and maybe it's like a 70s thing, but it did seem kind of gross. It did seem just sort of like really, and I think in Debbie Does Dallas, there's a whole sequence where there's just like a chick getting it on with a candle. You know, like, not lit, obviously, but she's just getting just like some long, you know, candle, and she's just like and I'm just like watching this, even as a, you know, as a younger man, and just thinking, I don't understand. And so it's like, but now you go to the porn sites now, and it's like you'll see like the food thing, where it's not like a girl like getting it on with food. It's not like her in a corn cob, but it's like a guy having like just regular like missionary sex or whatever. But it's like the girl is covered in like pie leaving. Like they've hit her with pies, and once she's covered with pie, then they F her. And I'm like, what is going on in your head that you need a girl to be covered in, like, baked beans before you can F her?
I have a friend, and I'm sure you have friends like this, too. Hell, you have listeners like this, who likes to point out the most just off-putting things that he comes across on the Internet. There's a website, and you can go to it right now if you want, called cakefarts.com.
Oh, no, I've seen that site. No, Siegfried sent me that site.
Why am I not surprised?
And, like, I went there, and I was, like, 10 seconds in. I'm like, nope, and I closed it.
But also, it's like,
I don't even know what happens there.
It's exactly what you think. It is pretty girls sitting on food and farting on it. And it's like, why?
Does somebody...
Who chooses that?
Anybody who's horrified by this, but then does somebody eat the cake?
No.
Well, then what is then I don't even get it.
It's like crush videos. It
makes no sense.
It's specifically for people who are turned on by this one very weird thing.
Okay.
And there's there are other categories. Like, there's a pudding section.
Okay, I could get in some horrible way the idea if a woman came and, like, defiled the cake in that way, and then a guy, like, consumed the cake. Like, I wouldn't want to watch it ever or think about it. But I could get it because, in a way, that's like some weird thing where, like, that's like some submissive thing where a guy is submissive because, like, she's, you know, he has to, like, you know, because...
Although it's unhygienic.
Look, no argument for me. I'm just saying, you know, that is the thing where, like, I guess I get it because then it's like a dominant thing. But if nothing's being done with the cake... Where is the payoff there? I don't know.
I don't understand it at all. There are, and this, you know, it actually made me feel good. It made me feel good the first time I heard about furries, actually.
Yeah, it's
when
relatively
I reached that
normal.
Point where I thought, no, I felt good because I thought I had gotten, like, really jaded.
Oh, yeah.
And then and it's like, no matter how jaded I am, I have discovered there are always going to be things that are occasionally going to come up that I'm going to go, people do what?
Yeah.
And then I feel better because I realize I am not completely jaded.
Yeah, and it's like the furry thing, I don't find it gross or whatever. It's just, to me, that's a thing I just don't get. Like, the furry thing, I'm horrified by it or whatever. That's a thing where I have no reciprocal, receptor in my brain for that. Like, I'm indifferent to it, you know? Because there's a listener of ours, a longtime listener we had in the studio a couple years ago who's a furry. And I was just asking him, like, what is the deal? Like, and I said, you know, and I tried to be very polite about it, but I said, like, no offense. I said, sometimes people who have very odd, you know, or at least niche sexual behaviors. Like, sometimes that there was a thing that happened early on. I said, was there something that happened to you? Did something bizarre happen? Did some sexual encounter happen when you were young and so you can't relate normally sexually or whatever? And he was just like, no, it's just like this thing. He said, I wasn't molested. I wasn't anything. He's like, it's just me. And I'm like, well, all right. But yeah, the cake thing, I'm not making sense. But just to get back and just to wrap this all up, as Cheryl's typing in the text box, Cheryl says, you're making it harder for me to get quality guests. Stop with the porn and the cake farting. Thank you. But I think she's implying that Terry Brooks might not want to come on the show again. If that's, but your thing about how the porn seems to have developed this fixation on the ass, I find that, first of all, as I said, not interesting, and in fact, really off-putting.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not passing judgment, whatever. But so much so that if there's like the hottest chick in a porn film, and like all the regular porn, you know, all the regular sex, I say, sounding like a Puritan, if all of the regular stuff is happening, and then it's like that begin, that actually just ruins the whole thing. I'm like, all right, off, click. I just I can no longer I can no longer enjoy the porn if that begins happening. I do think it is more prevalent, and I will just say this: like I don't know that this is true, and I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush here. And I am also not one of those guys. I'm not like some Andrea Dworkin dick who just, which I guess is a funny statement. But I'm not some one of those like joyless people who thinks that like all porn is degrading and it's meant to like repress women. And there are other how do we put this? There are other acts that take place in adult film. Often the and you will hear this a lot if you like from Catherine McKinnon types. The conclusion of the sexual act in a porn film, you will often hear that described as a way to oppress and degrade women. And I'm not going to the whole thing about that, but I will just say I am not a person who thinks that everything that is done in a porn film is done because men have some secret desire to like, you know, to defile and oppress the female sex. That being said, I do think that for some, maybe not most, but I do think that for some guys, I think the whole butt sex thing, I think that is a whole like, because she won't like it and it hurts.
Yeah.
That's why I'm into it. I do think that that is the appeal for some guys. And I think that's the appeal for some women who like it. I think that women who like that kind of thing are sometimes they just like the idea that it's a little bit, it feels a little bit painful and forceful, which is itself like a whole thing that a lot of chicks get off on. Anyway, and so in deference to Cheryl, we can bring the curtain down on this,
yeah.
Unless you have any final thoughts on it.
Not really, other than I just wish that, I don't shop pornography very often, but I wish it had like little warnings on it that would tell me what things are in there that I might not personally like.
Seriously.
Like if it says, you know, there's anal sex, if it says there are chicks here doing things to each other and they have really, really long fingernails.
Oh, yeah,
and,
no.
And if it's, oh, yes, and warning, lots of extreme close-ups that will make you feel like you're watching a medical special on the Discovery Channel.
The gyno cam.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another thing I could do with that, by the way. And just my final thought on this. Here's the other thing, just as a porn consumer. Here's what I could do without. I could do without, like, the tight, like, speed bag shot. You know, where it's just the guys.
Yes.
And there's just boom, 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 boom. You know, and it's like, and it really is just like, it's like a laundry bag hanging on a train.
And it just goes on forever. And you're kind of like, why is this supposed to be sexy?
And that's
to me?
The thing is, yeah, it's like, who's getting off on that scene, on that angle?
Yeah,
no one.
Yeah.
The horrible thing now is I've set up this whole thing of doing the top five sleaziest songs, which now, out of deference to Cheryl, I feel like we can't do. I think I have an alternate.
We could just get all the sleaze out of our system in one episode and then go back to less sleazy things tomorrow.
I have an alternate top five as well. I almost feel like we should do the alternate top five.
We could do that.
And then do the sleaze tomorrow, because it's not like that. Look, let's be honest. We can
just dole out the sleaze a little at a time.
Well, we can end the porn conversation here, because who are we fooling? It's not like it's not going to come up again. It's, you know, it's, that's like saying we're never going to talk about Vicodin again. I think we all know that's not true. So I'm going to file away the sleazy porn conversation.
Okay.
And we will get to this. We will have this secondary top five, this alternate, this standby top five, because I feel like if I mention the top five, I can't just like not do it again, because we blew off the top five yesterday. So I'll do it, but I'll put this other one together.
And we should do something. I should read something nice, or we should do something not sleazy before we do our next.
I was just thinking that.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
How about we do the monkey watch, because it's not sleazy.
Okay.
Or creepy. Anyway.
Yes. All right. Here's your...
And plus I get to hear you make the monkey noise.
Here's your monkey watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I don't have Anna Griffin here to do this.
You're getting better at that.
Yes. Hooray. Done.
A retired circus chimpanzee is the Cezanne of simians, drawing crowds to a Brazilian zoo to watch him paint. paint.
That was instant karma right there.
The 26-year-old chimp called Jimmy has been producing surprisingly lovely paintings each day for 3 weeks at the Niterói Zoo. Trainer Roshed Seba said Monday Jimmy doesn't like the toys and other diversions that other chimps enjoy. So 3 weeks ago, Seba introduced him to painting after reading about animals in zoos elsewhere who enjoyed making art. Temperamental as great artists can be, Jimmy at times declines to paint if his cage is surrounded by too many onlookers. But for at least 30 minutes a day, he carefully dips his brush into plastic paint containers and uses broad, bold strokes to create his art.
And so what zoo is this at?
This is in Rio de Janeiro.
Okay. And so the monkey didn't ask to start painting, though. They just, like, left some stuff in there, and he just decided it was his thing.
Yeah, he just didn't like the tires and the swings and the normal toys. And the trainer said, you know, some animals like to paint, and gave him some art supplies. And he was like, painting? That's for me, said Jimmy the chimp.
Do some animals like to paint, or is that just sort of a...
Sure. There's dolphins who make art. We have an...
You're making that up.
We have an elephant here in the Oregon Zoo who was a painting elephant.
A dolphin doesn't even have hands. It doesn't... Well, okay, an elephant doesn't have hands, too, but how would a dolphin make art? You're lying. That is a lie. That's a lie, lie, lie. It's not true. An elephant has a trunk to hold a brush. What the
elephants
F is
can push things around, and they can hold things, and they can.
Are they sculpting?
Maybe.
I'm gonna go throw a pot. What the hell? You can't have an underwater kiln. What would a dolphin possibly be creating in the world of art?
They could make.
I want
they could
you
use
to
Photoshop.
Admit right now that you made that up. You never admit making anything up, and that is fabricated.
Okay, I may have made that.
Okay. You know, look how difficult it was to get you to admit that that one was actually made up. Okay. Jesus, because for a minute I was actually, I actually was believing it. And then part of me in the back of my brain went, no, Emerson, you're, Rick, keep it together. Let's not just swallow everything whole here. All right. There's your monkey watch. This is the weirdest show. Am I amusing you over there?
You are.
That's great. That's fantastic. Let's do one more here, and then we'll do the top five.
All right. What shall we do?
I don't know, Dawn. What shall we do? I was just going to ask you something about art and dolphins and something.
Okay.
But now it's escaped me. It seems like I had something really. Really important or interesting to tell you or to ask you just now. Wait, hold on. Monkeys, art, dolphins, underwater, kiln.
Sculpting.
Wait. Ah, now it's gone. Now that's my instant karma. All right. Here's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
A father in Florida wept as
A father where?
Florida.
All right, fantastic.
Wept as he apologized at a news conference for storming onto a school bus and threatening children on board because his 13-year-old disabled daughter had been bullied. James Willie Jones' voice cracked during the appearance Tuesday.
Get off those retarded children!
He said he himself was acting as a bully and no parent should copy his behavior. He says his daughter suffers from cerebral palsy and he could not stand by and helplessly watch her suffer. Standing by his wife, who also wept, Jones apologized for how he handled the situation. Jones was charged last week with disorderly conduct and disturbing a school function for the September 3rd incident. He posted $2,000 bail and was ordered to stay away from the driver and county school buses.
So what did he do exactly?
His daughter has cerebral palsy.
Right.
A bunch of other kids were making fun of her.
Right.
I guess she had complained about the kids making fun of her.
Right.
He, as I said, stormed onto the school bus.
Oh, and just kind of gave them what for.
And gave them all what for.
Yeah. This, by the way, this text says, even monkeys are laughing at your monkey sounds. Lol. All right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oop.
Okay. Shall we do the top five?
Yes, please.
All right. Here's your top five for
five,
Tuesday.
Four.
Wow. Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness. Counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
All right, so we won't be doing the top five sleaziest songs today. We'll do that tomorrow. When everyone will have forgotten today's unpleasant and extended, today's elongated porn discussion. I just have to ask real quickly, though. Did you see any of Patrick's porn collection? Like, either you know, just see, like, the collection itself or watch any of
yeah.
it?
Oh,
was
yeah.
it just normal, regular guy porn?
Yeah, it was all kinds of... But I found myself actually enjoying quite a bit of it because I like the old school porn where... in many cases, there were stories and such. But also, I don't know, there seemed to be more of a star quality to a lot of the actresses back then, if that makes sense.
Well, no, I can see that.
There's this one actress, I can't remember her name. She actually tried to go mainstream for a while, and she was on an episode of X-Files. And I can't remember her name now. And she was in a couple of tapes that Patrick had. And she was really sexy and really good. And a couple of her tapes were, there was one that was called Chameleon, I think it was called, that was kind of a sci-fi kind of shapeshifter movie, but it had some really hot
stuff.
Well,
now I'm running through in my head all of the female porn stars who tried to go mainstream, like Gina Lynn and Christy Canyon and Tracy Lords and, God, who else? What is her name? Rebecca Valentine. Who's that? She's in Boogie Nights. She plays the judge in Boogie Nights that is the custody hearing between...
Ashlyn Gear. That was her name.
I don't think I know who that. That must be after my time.
She's really terrific.
Because I only got the two eras of porn, you know, which is like, you know, the Intertron porn, where there really are no stars, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I mean, because it's just so fragmented. The audience is so fragmented for that. It's not like everybody goes to the movie house. And then the really, like, the classic porn where there's, like, the Christy Canyons of the world.
He had some real old Vanessa Del Rio tapes, too, and she was a lot of fun.
I don't think I know who Vanessa Del Rio is.
She was a strange woman who looked like she may have been a post-op transsexual, actually, or something, although I think I may have just been mapping that onto her or something. But she was another one of those porn actresses who just, again, that kind of Betty Page quality,
right,
where she seemed like she was actually having a good time.
Well, that's the thing, is like, you don't want it to be, I mean, you don't want it to look like the chick is just... first of all, like, actively not enjoying it, like she's, you know, uncomfortable or something, because that's not
just
good.
Look kind of bored.
That's almost as bad as the indifference. When the girl is, oh yes, you're so hot, oh yeah, bang me, you know, and it's like you're just thinking to yourself, like, what am I paying my $7 for, whatever it would cost to rent a porn film? Do people rent porn films?
I don't know.
Or do they just buy? You figure you just buy. Do you want to take that?
Fantasy adult video is still quite...
Well, they do rental.
So they do rental.
We should ask Jim about that when he's here.
Yes.
Big Jim Willig, porn clerk and funny guy, will be here on Friday. He'll be in the studio with us on Friday, ladies and gentlefolk. Okay, so we had top five sleaziest songs prepared, but we're going to do that tomorrow. We have now today spun the wheel of time. Kronos lands on November 18th. 1978. These are the top five songs from November 18th, 1978, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Dawn Taylor, what might our honorable mention be?
Honorable mention is the Bee Gees' Too Much Heaven.
Now with this is from Saturday Night Fever, is it not? I don't really know. I think it is. Saturday Night Fever came out in 77, I think. I think it was the same year as Star Wars.
Well, it would be whatever year that is, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily, though, because Saturday Night Fever came out in 77, and that soundtrack was huge. It sold like 25 million copies. So it's conceivable they were still releasing singles off that the following year.
Oh.
But it probably was 78, because I can't imagine that... Maybe it didn't come out the same year as Star Wars.
Well, Star Wars was 77,
But I guess it just doesn't seem possible that both those movies would have come out the same year. That almost seems like too much in the way of, like, there's just too much happening. I mean, there's just, because Saturday Night Fever was just such a massive film. That's in the lining of the planets that doesn't even seem like it could have happened. I have to say that I am not like a huge Bee Gees fanatic, but I never really hated them the way that we were all supposed to. Mm. We all went through that phase where, you know, we were supposed... I have this whole thing where everything in popular culture goes through four stages. That is popular, reviled, kitschy, and then indisputably great. You know, acknowledged as indisputably great. So like Dolly Parton, loved, made fun of, campy, and now acknowledged as indisputably wonderful.
Hall & Oates.
Really?
Hall & Oates has gone through... Yes, Hall & Oates is having a renaissance.
Okay.
Everyone has realized that Hall & Oates are awesome.
Kind of a great sort of blue-eyed soul sort of thing. Yeah, okay, I could see that. You know, but the Bee Gees, I think, are like that, where now everybody looks back and they're like, I like the Bee Gees, F you. Where for a while everybody hated them, and then I think Manilow is getting to that point. We're going to see Manilow entering the indisputably great thing pretty soon. You mark my words, in the next 5 years. I remember... This sounds so dopey. Secretly listening to Stayin' Alive when I was a kid, because my friends would have made fun of me. But just hearing Stayin' Alive when I was a young lad and just going, like, this is the best song I've ever heard.
Well, the Bee Gees were pretty much the antithesis of what we considered real rock and roll at the time.
Yeah. Well, and they're girly because they have, like, the airy, breathy vocals and whatever, and they're foreign. All right. These are the top five songs from the week of November 18th, 1978.
Number five, Billy Joel, My Life.
Wow.
Also known as the theme song to Bosom Buddies.
It's funny, actually. Our good friend Keelan says, Sleazy, I feel whiter already. And here's the thing. I mean, your whiteness is increasing as we speak with the infliction of Billy Joel on you.
Well, this entire top five actually is...
It's pretty darn relentlessly white. But, I mean, there are a few whiter people than Billy Joel.
I like a lot of Billy Joel, and I will actually say there are probably a few Billy Joel songs that I actually love.
Me too.
This is an early one. This one is pleasant. I'll sing along with this in the car if it comes on, but this is not a song I seek out.
You know who else doesn't like this song is Billy Joel. He himself has talked about this, and I should say that it's a nice song. It's a nice song with a bouncy melody. It has a beat. You can hum along, whatever. I should say, first and foremost, I have no problem with Billy Joel. You actually put it perfectly. I like a lot of Billy Joel. There's a couple of Billy Joel songs that I love. Even though he himself seems like a raging dick.
Yeah.
But it's like, you can't get hung up on that. You got to put that aside. So I love a lot of Billy Joel songs, several of them anyway. I like a lot of his stuff. He, though, was interviewed about some of his... They were doing, like, a song-by-song recap in, like, Musician Magazine or something. And they would give him a song, and then he would, like, give his first thoughts on it. And he said about this, about My Life, he said that some of your songs... He said it's like having kids, where some of your songs grow up to be doctors and lawyers, and some of your songs grow up to be bums. And he said, My Life is a bum. He said, My Life is a song that just grew up to sleep on a bench somewhere.
I was wondering about people who get... singers who are so intrinsically like linked with a specific song that they just have to sing it over and over again to the point where they have to sing it thousands of times.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and some of them seem to always have a good time with it anyway. It's like, you know, Wayne Newton never seems to ever seem tired of singing Dankeschön. But I also always think, God, you know, at what point did Tony Orlando just loathe Tie a Yellow Ribbon so much that he felt like he would rather cut his own throat than sing it again?
Willie Nelson said this one time. He said, if you ever write a song, he's like, he was talking about songwriters. He said, if you ever get ready to record a song, he's like, you better love it. Because if not, that'll be the one that's a hit, and you will have to sing it the rest of your life every night. And he's like, so just know you like, you know, love something before you record it. But I mean, it must suck. I mean, that must just be the worst of all worlds, where the money is sufficient, or you just don't have any other skills, and so you're having to get on stage and go, all right, tie a yellow ribbon around the crap. Can
and
I go home?
And he's got a place in Branson now.
Yeah.
And so he's singing Tie a Yellow Ribbon like five times a day.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't even imagine what that must be like. Well, it's like you get to a point like you're one of the animatronic bears at Chuck E. Cheese or something. It's
especially if it's a song that not only do you hate, because I think Willie Nelson was talking about what was he talking? I think he was talking about like On the Road Again or The Party's Over or something. And they said, oh, you must be sick of singing that. And he's like, no. He's like, I don't release a song. And Willie Nelson said the songs that he wrote that he didn't like, he would give to other people. He would write them for somebody else. He's like, that way they sing them and I get the check. but especially if it's a song that you not only hate, but it must be triply frustrating if it's a song that you hate and that's a hit and you know that audiences come to hear it. And it's a song that's totally non-representative of what you do. I mean, the best ever example of that, I am a massive Chuck Berry fan. But do you realize the only number one he ever had was that goddamn My Ding-a-ling song?
Yeah.
I mean, and he has to sing that everywhere he goes. I mean, you know, because of the audience, you didn't play My Ding-a-ling, you know. You know who hates one of his own songs is Elton John. He loathes Crocodile Rock. hates it.
I can see that.
Madonna hates Material Girl. She'll do. But the thing is, when you're those guys, you got enough other hits that you could just be like, F it, I'm not singing Material Girl, but I got these 10 other hits that I'm going to sing like in a row. Whereas, you know, if you're Tony Orlando, like, you know, or Carl Perkins, you know, there's blue suede shoes, blue suede, kill me. all right, there you go. These are the top five, November 18th, 1978.
Oh, God help me. Number four, Rod Stewart. Do you think I'm sexy?
Speaking of sleazy, by the way, this really is almost the song, I will actually tell you, this is the song that triggered the creation of the other list, the sleaziest songs ever to be played on the radio. Because I was just doing this one, the November 18th, 1978, and I heard this, and I'm like, God damn. This song can give you a cold sore. I mean, it's just so, it's like he's slithering all over your body greasily while he sings.
What's funny that you went in, like, the whole sleazy direction, because the top five that I was looking at, I came up with over the weekend was the top five worst songs using food as a sexual metaphor.
Do you have that top five?
Yeah.
Oh, we ought to do that, like, Friday.
Okay.
I hate this song.
This is also part of, there's this whole genre, this whole substrata of music with people singing about how sexy they are.
Yeah.
That just always kind of skeezes me out, whether it's like this or, you know, my milkshake brings the boys to the yard or whatever. It's just like, and they're just always just, you want to find the person that's singing the song and just slap them across the face.
And throw acid on them, Don.
Yes.
Hey, Rod Stewart, do you want a drink? The other thing that is bad about this song is this represents just, this is another genre, which is the rock stars who made disco records. You know, because the Stones made a disco album, Kiss made a disco album, Rod Stewart made several disco albums, and that just really, it's like everyone was another, like another body blow.
And David Bowie did not have to actually make a disco album, because he was doing disco before it got, like, stolen right from him and turned into disco.
Totally. And I could almost forgive the Stones doing it, too, because the Stones always, they always sought out, like, different sort of, like, rhythmic approaches to their music and, you know, and sort of different, yeah, you know, they fused a lot of different elements. Whereas, like, this is just crap.
Yeah, this is just terrible.
These are the top five songs for the week of November. Oh, it's those strings, too, those, like, fake-ass strings right there. Top five songs of the week of November 18th, 1978.
Number three, Olivia Newton-John, A Little More Love. So these are just all songs from the roller disco,
totally,
aren't they?
Have I ever played you that song by Christy McNichol and her brother Jimmy McNichol?
You haven't played it before, but I know I've heard it.
It's the one that's all incesty?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'll play it tomorrow.
Somewhere in about this time period, my mother was a nurse at UCLA Medical Center. And Olivia Newton-John was actually in the hospital for something. Oh, no, it wasn't Olivia Newton-John. It was Olivia Newton-John's manager. And my mom was his nurse. And it's sort of like, as a thank you gift, he gave her, like, this about-to-be-released Olivia Newton-John album that hadn't hit the store yet. And all I remember about it is that she did a cover of Summertime Blues.
Really?
That was the most god-awful thing I had ever heard in my life.
I'm going to look for it for tomorrow. Summertime Blues. Consider it found. All I remember about, I mean, not all I remember, but Olivia Newton-John. One of the things I remember about Olivia Newton-John was how, as a wee lad, I found that song, that physical song, like, really, really hot. Like, it was a big turn-on if you were... Because it was purportedly about aerobics, but really it was just about effing you, I think.
Yeah.
At one of the, like, talent shows at my Catholic school, there was, like, this group of girls that had worked out, like, some sort of an aerobics routine to the physical song. And I remember them being told in the sternest of tones that they were not going to be allowed to gyrate to physical by Olivia Newton-John, because that song was the work of the devil. And they may have actually been right about that, really, because it was... It really, and this is how lame and inexperienced I was. It just seemed, that song just sounded like sex incarnate, or at least my idea of it. And the idea that Olivia Newton-John would sound like sex incarnate kind of gives you an idea of where the where the curve was.
Well, and have you seen that video recently?
No.
Oh my God, it is the campiest, cheesiest, gayest thing ever.
Awesome.
With her, you know, in her...
She's like a leotard
and her spandex thing and the leg warmers surrounded by these giant oiled up muscle guys.
Fantastic. I have to watch that later. These are the top five songs from the week of November 18th, 1978.
Number two, Toto, Hold the Line.
It's interesting that we've gone from this long porn conversation to a series of completely sexless songs.
I love this song, though. I don't know why, but I love this song.
Well, okay.
I can't for the life of me explain to you why of all these songs, this one I like.
Yeah, I can't help you out there anymore. All I know is that there's a million bands from around this era that all sound exactly like this. I mean, Toto is Night Ranger, is Foreigner, is Journey, is GTR. I mean, they're all... Not in the way you've been treating my friends. The interesting thing about Toto, the one interesting thing I know anyway, is that they were... They have sort of an interesting history because they were all studio musicians. And they were all... There was this row of studios at some recording place in L.A., and they just saw each other all the time. And then they would have, like, jam sessions, as guys do. And I think that they actually just clicked really well, and they said, we ought to just form a band. And so that's what Toto is. It's just a bunch of studio guys who just decided to get there and, you know, well, we got this recording studio, why not? And then they ended up, you know, kind of becoming huge-ish. Didn't they sing that song, is that Africa song, them?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I'll take you there. No, that's not, I'm singing something else, but what is the...
Down in Africa.
Yeah, that. That's the thing, yeah.
I kind of like that one, too. I don't know why. I shouldn't.
You're just a Toto fan. My sister's a big fan of Toto, actually, and so go figure. Like, I picture guys who listen to Toto listening to a lot of Asia.
Yeah. I think it's just that wow sound that they keep throwing in the background.
And I was thinking that, like, keyboard in the background is very 80s. Again, though, with the whole, like, screaming hard rock solo, and yet the song itself manages to be completely unthreatening. It's like the guy's playing inside a plexiglass cage. All right, these are the... Oh, and they did Rosanna, too. That was the other Toto song.
Yeah.
These are the top five songs of the week of November 18th, 1978. Don Taylor.
Number one, Barbara Streisand and Neil Diamond, You Don't Bring Me Flowers.
Is this from A Star Is Born?
No, this was just something they did.
This is just a thing they recorded.
Yeah. I hate this song.
I guess it wouldn't be, because I guess it would be Kris Kristofferson then, probably,
yeah.
If it was a storm.
Talk to me anymore.
Wow.
When I come through the door at the end of the...
And yet you know every word.
Of course I do. And I love Neil Diamond so much that, God, I hate this song.
You couldn't wait to love me. You used to hate to leave me.
There's nothing good about this. Oh, God. Wow.
When it's good for you.
Do you like Neil Diamond in general?
I do. I love Neil Diamond. I am an unabashed Neil Diamond fan.
So it's just the song. Is it the song or is it Barbara Streisand?
It's her histrionics. It's the thing. Barbara Streisand is one of the singers that I have always understood that technically she is a brilliant, amazing singer with this amazing instrument.
Right.
And I can't stand anything she records.
I could see that.
I just hate her music.
Yeah. It used to be so natural. I find Barbara Streisand really hot in a strange way.
I can see that, though. I mean, I always liked her as an actress, particularly in the movies she made in, like, the 70s and stuff. She's really insanely charismatic and funny and personable.
Does she act anymore? Does she really... What is the last Barbara Streisand movie there was?
She doesn't. I think she mostly just enjoys being rich at this point.
Damn, well, good for her. I mean, she did strike me as, you know, as being a great actress. But, you know, maybe she's just enjoying kind of being her. But you know what this is? This is the Celine Dion syndrome, you're right, where... Everything, every line, like from the beginning of the song, is a crescendo.
I remember seeing her reading an interview with Barbara Streisand she was going to give a concert like on the grounds of her home. She hadn't done a concert in like 20 years or something, and she was going to do this concert for some kind of benefit for charity or something. And they're talking about her rehearsing, and you know, she has her accompanist who, like, you know, arranges all of her stuff, and he was coming by and they were rehearsing. But for the times when he couldn't be there, she has this computerized piano that he has programmed all of the songs, his
right.
own, him playing all the songs, into the computerized piano. It's like the world's most expensive player piano, just personalized for Barbara Streisand.
Wow. That's why you want to have money.
Yeah.
That really is, that's the upside of being rich right there. Boy, you know, I never really realized how much Celine Dion just sort of is Barbara Streisand. Well, there you go. I should say, if you've enjoyed today's entertainment, you have many folks to thank for that, including but not limited to Castalia Language Center. They are, and listen to what a fantastic segue that was right out of You Don't Bring Me Flowers into Lenny D, ladies and gentlemen. Castalia Language Center can be contacted at portlandspanish.com. That's their website, portlandspanish.com. Clara Grebel is the name of the woman who owns and operates that place, and she's a native Spanish speaker from Argentina. She operates Castalia Language Center in downtown Portland, and we talk a lot about the fact that it you know, caters to adults. And there's a couple things we mean by that. One is, obviously, they limit their class sizes to 8 people. We've talked about that a lot. There's no more than 8 people in any one class, which means that you're going to get more personalized attention. You know, if you have a question, there's something that is troubling you or something you want to dwell on a little bit more, something you want to focus on, you're going to be able to do that because it's not like there's 50 other people in the class. And also the fact that adults just learn differently from kids. One of the other things we should mention is that they actually accommodate schedules that adults have. I mean, it's sort of easy to go to Spanish class when you're a kid, I suppose, if only because, like, you gotta be there. Like, you're at school, you're sort of legally required to attend. You're there, Spanish class is there, you might as well go. You get to be an adult, you got, you know, jobs and kids of your own and these whatever. It becomes a real hassle trying to fit stuff into your schedule. So Castalia Language Center actually offers classes different days, different times, all throughout the week, and at different levels, too. So if you say, well, look, I want to study intermediate Spanish, but it's like I can only really do it in the mornings, well, they got something for that. So if you want to study advanced Spanish or beginning Spanish in the evenings, they can make that work as well. So different classes at different times, different days, which means they can sort of customize, you know, something to whatever it is that your needs are. You can find out more about it, portlandspanish.com. Portlandspanish.com. That's how you contact Castalia Language Center. Yes, Don?
I got nothing.
Oh, damn it. I thought you did the combination of typing on the screen and then turning and looking at me, and I thought I was waiting for you to say something in Spanish.
Oh, I will say that with Castalia Language Center, you will get more explosivo for your dinero.
No, I don't think that's not what you were going for, probably.
No, but I was thinking about
it. More explosion for your, for your buck.
Yeah.
I guess, but you're really just saying more explosion for your money.
Yeah.
She's from Barcelona. All right, there you go. All right, let's end this program now. Genius. Well done, Don. And I'm only half kidding about that. All right, the Rick Emerson Show comes to you today and every day from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Angler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow, Ms. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, and later on this week, Friday, Big Jim Willig will be here to talk about his comedy performance happening on Saturday. The Rick Emerson Show is made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Tuesday, September 21st, 2010. Thank you for listening. An encore presentation of Legion of News and this very fine radio program next, right here on the Emerson News Network. See you all tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.
The proceeding was a production of the Emerson News Network.